special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yo, what's going on? We are here live on Blog Talk Radio through the Golong Media Channel here. This is the latest episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show here. And I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the CHC on Sports. We have the sister show, the Cohort Truth on Sports. Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Here through the Golong Media Channel. And I occasionally have articles on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and through the CHEOnSports.com there. So, but we have another show here coming up here on this Sunday night, September 10th. And there's like a lot to go over, a lot to talk about here, you know, through the week in boxing. We had a good number of shows, that went down over the course of the weekend, starting with, wanted to go through a few things that were, on Friday night and then going into Saturday. But before I get through all of that, I just wanted to, get through a quick commercial break and then get right into the boxing discussion. So, if you want to call in to talk about boxing, number is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. You're listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Golong Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
A long time ago, there was an ancient prophecy from the outermost edges of space that knows no boundaries. This fall, Earth as we know it will never be the same. One man, one weapon. Critics are calling it the best comedy of the year. From the makers of the Internet, this is his last chance to save the world. But then, the world does not exist.
Man, forget all that. Just download my special, man. Or get the DVD when it's available.
They will search for answers.
The link's posted below.
All right. We're here back live on the Boxing Source show. Once again, number to dial in, 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Ignoring through a few things here. Thinking about, what's going on, over in Florida here, with the big old, big storm, Hurricane Irma going through Florida right now. Have a lot of ties to that state. So, thinking about a lot of, people, a couple of people that have, been active callers here on the show that are, pretty much going through what's, happening down there right now. So, thinking about them and hoping all of them are safe and sound, while this storm is going through. Just making sure that, all of them are okay going through this thing as it's happening, over the course of the rest of the day and through tomorrow. Here with the episode of the show, we had like a lot of action that went down over the course of the weekend. We had a few telecasts. You had one telecast that was on Showtime that I pretty much caught on Friday night. And then on Saturday night, they have the Superfly fight card that was, over in California. So, we had a good amount of action that we were able to check out on both Showtime and on HBO. We were able to, see what was going on there. And we also had the first fight that was on the World Boxing Super Series. So we'll be able to talk a little bit about that as well. But I want to see if I can try to do this in chronological order, just going through the results and then, happened here in this particular fight, these particular fights, so to speak. starting off with, what happened over in Las Vegas at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino there. We had Showtime's publication there. It was promoted by TGB Promotions and Mayweather Promotions. Of course, for those that were able to see that particular telecast, you had Floyd Mayweather there at ringside with Leonard Ellerbe for a majority of the fight card. A couple of notable fights that happened. Peter Quillen made his return to the ring after his first round knockout loss to Daniel Jacobs. He went in the ring against Deshaun Johnson. He was able to win that fight by decision. What's notable about this particular fight here, of course, when he fought Daniel Jacobs, that was for the WBA regular middleweight championship. But here after, being out of the ring nearly 2 years, he kind of like packed on a good amount of weight, significant amount of weight there. So with this fight here against Deshaun Johnson, a guy that was coming in there with a record of 22 wins, 21 losses, and 3 draws, Peter Quillen came in there as a light heavyweight, so 175-pound, limit there. So he was, able to just get back into the ring and just get back into the flow of things there with that particular fight there, winning by unanimous decision there in the light heavyweight telecast. The first fight that was on the televised card there for Showtime was a scrap where you had Caleb Plant going up against Andrew Hernandez. Pretty much was a something where, Caleb Plant should have been able to, go through Andrew Hernandez and, get a – people expected him to get a knockout win against Andrew Hernandez, but he was not, able to do it, even though he basically was winning virtually every round in that particular fight. He just, still was just not able to put Hernandez away or, be aggressive enough to the point where – he was able to score, score a knockout there against him. So he was just, able to, get the shutout decision there against Hernandez there, 190 by all judges to improve his record to 16-0 with 10 knockouts to his record there. So he was able to, stay undefeated there in the super middleweight division and see if he could get, a chance to have a bigger and a better fight in the near future. The next fight that was on that telecast was another super middleweight fight where you had a, one of Floyd Mayweather's proteges, J. Leon Love, taking on Abraham Hand. J. Leon Love, has had a, good list of fights where he had a little winning streak going on, but since his loss to Rogelio Medina back in 2014, but, many of those fights were, kind of like, I would say, not really notable at all. I mean, we had like one particular fight that, I was able to see up here in the Washington, D.C. area on April 1st, 2016, where he fought Michael Gabanga, was able to knock him out. But, Gabanga was a guy that came in there with 21 wins and 24 losses and had a, string of fights where he, lost a good amount of fights. Before even facing J. Leon Love with one win, actually, before facing J. Leon Love in that particular fight. But here, Love was coming in there with a 23-1 record going up against Abraham Hand, who was, 26-3. Hand wasn't, somebody that that kind of like looked like a dangerous fighter. He did lose to Sergio Mora and Glenn Tapia earlier in his career, but there was nothing where he had like a big win up to this point facing J. Leon Love. And in this fight, it was something where people expected J. Leon Love to be able to get in that ring and be able to, outbox or, out-hustle Abraham Hand, but was not able to do that, over the course of the fight. And it looked like, up into, pretty much in the first, six rounds or so, six rounds, looked like Han was doing more in the ring than J. Leon Love was, especially in the first four or five rounds. It looked like J. Leon Love didn't want to engage or didn't want to press the action or anything like that. So it looked like he was winning the fight. And, within that sixth and seventh round, that's when it seemed like J. Leon Love was trying to, get back into the particular fight there. Then coming into the, coming into pretty much the second half of the fight, with a few rounds left to go, there was a headbutt, clash of heads between Han and Javion Love, and that caused a cut on both guys. But for Abraham Han, it was a lot more serious. If you were able to see the replay on that, just the instant after the headbutt happened, a lot of blood was lost from Abraham Han, and he ended up going to the ground because he was, you know, real dizzy there. So ended up going to the scorecards, and two of the judges scored it basically 76-76, and one judge scored it 79-73 for Javion Love. But with the two judges scoring it 76-76, ended up being a majority draw. And, you know, I was saying that, you know, it kind of like took a good, you know, good amount of time for the judges to come up with that decision. It looked like they, you know, it was like they were kind of waiting for, you know, Abraham Han to leave the ring before posting that decision. You know, he was okay. It seemed, you know, before he was leaving the ring, but, you know, for precautionary measures, they had to, you know, put him in a stretcher, and they were able to, you know, get him to a hospital so he could be checked for concussion protocol. But in that particular fight, I just felt that, you know, Javion Love did not do much at all. He was not performing well. He was not, you know, moving around the ring very well, was not being the aggressor in the fight. So I don't see how, you know, two judges were able to give him enough rounds to make it a draw there in that particular fight. But still, as a result, since it's a technical draw, Abraham Han goes to 26-3-1, and Javion Love moves to 23-1-1. Now, going to the main event, I mean, you have the WBC Super Middleweight Championship on the line that was vacated by former champion at Super Middleweight, Badu Jack, who moved up to light heavyweight after his fight against James Aguil, which ended up being a draw. And this fight here was David Benavidez, who was ranked number 4 in the WBC, against Ronald the Thrill Gavril, who was rated number 6 in the WBC. They weren't able to, you know, get a fight put together between Anthony Durrell and Callum Smith, which usually is the case when a title is vacant. The top two contenders fight it out for that title, but one, think Callum Smith. Callum Smith opted to be part of that World Boxing Super Series in the Super Middleweight Division. And then with him out, you also had the number 3 contender there, Avni Yildirim. He's also involved in the World Boxing Super Series. The guy that's at number 5, Chris Eubank Jr., he's also involved in the World Boxing Super Series. And I don't know what was up with, you know, Anthony the Dog Durrell, but he wasn't part of, he wasn't, you know, included in this particular fight for the vacant title. So ended up being David Benavidez versus Ronald Gavril. Of course, a lot of people know about David Benavidez because of his, you know, exciting knockout win over Rogelio Medina a few months ago. And so that propelled him to be able to get this shot against Gavril for the WBC Super Middleweight Championship. Gavril is another guy that was part of, you know, Mayweather Promotions, and he was looking to see, you know, with his, you know, amateur background and his skills, if he was going to be able to, you know, take this, WBC Super Middleweight Championship here with the win over David Benavidez. And you know, this fight here between these two was very, very good. You had Gavril, you know, early on working the body, trying to work the body of Benavidez, trying to see if he could, you know, tire him out. while, you know, Benavidez was, you know, throwing lots of combinations, going up, you know, with the jabs, threw a lot of jabs there in this particular fight. Scored a, you know, a few good, you know, scored a few good combinations. It looked like he was, you know, having the upper hand for, you know, majority of the fight against Ronald Gouveia, but Gouveia was still right there, still in front of him, still trying to execute his plan, working the body, especially within the first half of the fight. It seemed like a good number of, you know, fights, rounds there were kind of hard to score, and it looked like it was a close fight, you know, up until the 12th round. And in the 12th round, it looked like Benavidez was trying to finish things off, went towards Ronald Gouveia and ended up getting caught with a good shot that kind of threw off his balance, and he ended up going down in the 12th round. He was able to get up from it. Wasn't seriously hurt, but looked like that was going to, you know, kind of like take things in another direction there. But I think we had like a caller in here. I'm going to see if they're going to be able to get back on there. But continuing to what I was talking about, it was going to the, you know, going into the scorecards, and you had, you know, pretty much a contrasting scorecard here with you had Adelaide Bird scoring about 116-111 for Benavidez. Yeah, Glenn Trowbridge scoring about 116-111 for Ronald Gouveia, and then Dave Moretti scored about 117-111 to award the WBC Super Middleweight Championship to David Benavidez. And so now David Benavidez is the new WBC Super Middleweight Champion, stays undefeated at 19-0 here. So he was able to get the win over Ronald Gouveia. Gouveia falls to 18-2. Like I was saying, it was a good back and forth fight between those two, and you know, I think that was something where I would say that, you know, both fighters kind of like show what they're going to be able to do. Benavidez, you know, Benavidez, one of the notable things with Benavidez was that, you know, he was coming into that title fight at 20 years old. You know, one of the youngest guys currently challenging and then winning a world championship there. And, you know, Gouveia came in there, you know, very game. Was there right in front of Benavidez, you know, was very slick, you know, guarding a lot of the shots that Benavidez was throwing, you know, even though he was getting caught a couple of times, but you know, he was still, you know, he was still, you know, doing his thing in there in the ring, but. You know, I kind of like see that guys will, you know, both guys will, they may be able to face each other once again in the near future. But I think that Gouveia will probably, you know, move down in the super middleweight rankings there for the WBC before getting another shot at Benavidez. I think Benavidez will, you know, end up fighting the next, you know, the next highest contender there in Anthony Durrell. You know, maybe if there's still time left, maybe later, you know, at the end of this year or whatnot. Let me see here. We got a Erico 813. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Trill calling in from Tampa. Rain, sleet, or snow. I'm right here in front of you, right here with you. What's going on?
Wow. Yeah, I was saying something about, you know, all my folks that are, you know, calling, you know, they used to call in that's going through the storm, man. And I know the thing's huge, but, I mean, it's real serious out there, man.
Yeah, man. Nothing to play with at all. Thank God it's been downgraded to, like, a Category 2 at this point, which I kind of expected once it hit landfall. But nevertheless, still taking every precaution necessary.
Yeah, that's what's up. Yeah, the thing is, you know, kind of like it had like a, you know, weird turn there. It seems like it's currently, you know, still moving north. So it's trying to, you know, move further inland so that, you know, pretty much a lot of the state will get a lot of rain. You know, it's currently getting a lot of rain now. So, you know, just hoping that, you know, most of the wind damage and storm surge doesn't really, you know, damage a lot of the area here. So, yes, just still hoping that it'll just, you know, come through, just go through, and, you know, just get it over with.
Definitely, man. Definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, right here in this first segment, I was just, like, went through the fight card that was on Showtime on Friday night. You had that WBC Super Middleweight Championship fight with Benavidez and Ronald Gavril, which was, you know, a pretty entertaining fight. You know, kind of like a few close rounds there. You know, but Benavidez was still, you know, able to get the split decision to win the WBC belt. So, were you able to catch anything on the Showtime card?
No, I wasn't able to catch those fights. Just you know, just anticipation of getting ready for the storm and everything. I think the main thing I caught was the fact that a person lost just became via knockout, via fourth round. I won't get to that yet because you probably hadn't gotten that yet. But I was able to catch that first fight. And what class was that in again, please?
The fight that was Saturday or Friday?
Yeah, Friday.
Friday was for the super middleweight championship, WBC.
And who's that? I'm sorry, who was that again, please?
David Benavidez was fighting Ronald Gavril for the vacant title that Battle Jack gave up when he moved up to light heavyweight.
Right. Yeah, the Benavidez, that name rings out. I know we talked about name in brief before. So who got that win? I'm sorry to repeat again.
Yeah, Benavidez was able to get the split decision win there to win the belt.
Okay. All right, so next, I know we definitely talked about his name before, so at least someone has a title that has somewhat of a name. That's the least I can say about that fight. It's just an interesting time as you see people moving around in these divisions. Like, for example, Crawford, I think he vacated with, I think it was an IBF or one of those belts. He vacated.
Yes, IBF.
Not having to fight that mandatory. And I need to investigate that kid that is, what, 12-0, I think Russian, Ukraine, wherever, just where he's from. But
yeah, I'm going to get into that one. Yep.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, that one was another notable fight there, you know, over the course of the weekend, as, you know, you had the guy there, Oleksandr Usyk, who was the WBO cruiserweight champion. And he was, you know, in this first fight of the World Boxing Super Series, he fought Marco Huck, who was, you know, a former champion there at cruiserweight. And so, you know, that was something that was, you know, looking forward to during yesterday, you know, beginning of the day, it was kind of like scrambling to see if there was like any way that I could watch the fight. And, you know, kind of like last minute, the World Boxing Super Series said that they were going to broadcast the fight on their website. So I was like, yeah, it's very good. At least, you know, I'm going to be able to catch it. And so you're always able to see, you know, a good, you know, probably like a good four or five rounds there between Oleksandr Usyk and Marco Huck. And, you know, I was, you know, kind of looking forward to it. But, you know, after the first, you know, two or three rounds, it was just something where you just saw, like, either how good Oleksandr Usyk is or how past it that Marco Huck was. You know, Usyk looked like he was going to, you know, he was able to do anything he wanted in that ring. And, you know, even when Marco Huck was throwing at him, he just couldn't, you know, couldn't do much of anything there. And it just ended up being like a blowout win for Alexander Usyk. He kind of like toyed with him for a lot of those rounds, you know, and then up until the 10th round where, you know, we kind of like picked up the pace and, you know, was able to connect with a lot of combinations without Marco Huck throwing back much at him. That's when the, you know, referee Robert Byrd ended up, you know, stopping the fight. Like I was saying, I was trying to, you know, look at the fight through the World Boxing Super Series website. Looked like everything was going good, and then all of a sudden, you know, after like I think it was like the 5th or 6th round, the stream cut off on the website, and I was like, "What? Are you kidding me?" So, you know, I had to go to like YouTube, and they had like a stream on YouTube or something like that through, you know, Russian channel or something in order to, you know, get this. But Usyk was, you know, still able to, you know, get the win, you know, and be able to stay undefeated and keep his WBO Cruiserweight Championship. They're moving to 13-0. And I think with, you know, the way Marco Huck was, you know, acting after the fight, it might have looked like it was, you know, something to where he, you know, he was saying that it was going to be his last fight, you know. So, so I don't know, like, what Huck's going to do, but Usyk's going to be moving forward to, I guess, fight the winner of Maris Brightus versus Perez. That's going to be happening on September 30th. So, like I said, I mean, I think Usyk is the best cruiserweight in this tournament. So, I just don't see anybody that's on here, Brightus, Gassiev, Dordakos, or anybody that could beat Alexander Usyk.
All right, now you stated you were actually on their site watching the fight and the screen cut off and everything, right?
Yep.
You know, I think that you really could have benefited if you would have reset your CPU and apply some CPU grease as well. Don't you think?
Nah. I tried all that. Tried deleting the cookies and all of that. Delete my history. All of that. I even went on another web browser, and it still didn't work, man.
Yeah, you know, that's one of those old IT jokes, CPU grease. but anyways, I mean, going into this particular matchup with Marco Huck and Usyk, you've definitely been yourself high on Usyk for quite some time, and point with this result, is certainly panned off him and everything. I mean, I'm not totally surprised that he took this fight. I mean, because Marco Huck, you could almost compare, put this, I'm going to give you two names, Marco Huck, Steve Cunningham. They're pretty much both at the end of their lines, respective lines at this point. They have names, they've done some stuff in the sport of boxing, but at this point, even with Steve Cunningham's last matchup, I expect him to do a lot better than what he did, you know, but at the same time, you're not surprised on what happened. Same thing with Marco Huck here. He's had his name out there for quite some time, but you know, Father Time is undefeated. We all know that. We know that. So,
yeah.
Aside from you said getting that win, I tell you, the one person I'm really interested in is actually Mike Perez. And
right.
You already know, coming down from heavyweight, he had some good success at heavyweight. Never got to be a world title holder, but nevertheless, he had good success at heavyweight. I think he what's that kid's name? He put in the hospital, abdominal mob, something like that. You remember the heavyweight fight? I think it's a fight. He basically put that kid
Who,
in the hospital.
That Perez fought?
Yeah, Mike Perez fought a Polish fighter about 2-3 years ago, and post fight they actually got him going to the hospital. Had to get put in the coma and all this stuff. Abdominal, one of those crazy names, man. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Abdusamalov, I think it was.
Yeah.
Might have been.
And even that fight, Perez was running around 230, 240, and now he's dropped all the way down to cruiserweight. So I want to see how effective he can be at cruiserweight. Frankly, from all, I'm not even sure if he's even had fights at cruiserweight since he's dropped down. But nevertheless, I want to see how good he can be, you know. So that's one
right.
I'm really looking forward to. My-
yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, he had one fight there at cruiserweight on June 10th over in Northern Ireland against Victor Bisceck, and he was able to score a win in that fight there, and you know got a KO with that. So I guess he was able to be, you know, able to come down to that cruiserweight division. But remember, like it was like 2 years since he was in the ring once he had that fight against Bisceck, you know, after losing to Alexander Povetkin by knockout in 2015. So, I mean, I guess he's, you know, trying the waters here with cruiserweight. But, you know, going into this World Boxing Super Series tournament against Maris Bridges, who, you know, was another guy that, you know, looks, you know, has looked the part so far, you know, over the course of his fights there. I mean, he was another guy that beat Marco Huck before the tournament was able to get a unanimous decision over him there before jumping into the tournament. So, I mean, this is going to be a pretty interesting test for him, you know, here, you know, right off the bat, you know, after moving into cruiserweight. So, I mean, this is not going to be something that's going to be a walk in the park for Perez unless if he, you know, comes in kind of like if he like just makes the limit of cruiserweight there at 200 pounds, whatever it is, and then, you know, gets significantly bigger at the day of the fight there against Maris Bridges and kind of like uses that weight and size to overwhelm Bridges in this particular fight. I mean, both of them are like the same height. So I don't know if that's going to work all too much.
Yeah, definitely interesting. And like you kind of alluding to, health and fitness is definitely a prime importance for someone like Chris. Like I said, that's came down from heavyweight. So with that said, you want to look at your conditioning, diet, all that stuff needs to be put together. And that's kind of one side that is kind of lost in boxing, you know, the health and conditioning portion of it. It's not just train. When you're in there putting everything together, your training, of course, your technique, even subscribing to a dietitian if necessary, you got to consider all that in going up and down in the classes of boxing. I mean, I'm not even safe. I mean, like for example, Pacquiao, who's transcending the class,
yeah.
And I won't even start with that. I'll try to remain serious, but no. It's, if you use some Pacquiao, Joe, you can do anything you want to do. But no, seriously.
Right,
like,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, think about it.
Exactly.
You want to die now from 240 to fight the cruiserweight, and you already have that natural size. I mean, you got to be doing some serious dieting and watch exactly what you're doing in order to die down that far, you know, and actually be effective in for a 12-round war. That's the people kind of get lost on that. On the entire circle of what it takes to be a boxer, a professional boxer at that point. So.
Exactly. So I'll be looking forward to, you know, that particular match there on September 30th, and I think, you know, the next thing that's coming up for the World Boxing Super Series is the super middleweight quarterfinals fight where you have Callum Smith going up against Eric Skoglin, that's going to be in Liverpool. So that one right there is, you know, they say that there's going to be some type of world title on there, but it's a WBC, you know, another WBC secondary title after, you know, the actual world championship was, you know, put on the line here, you know, on Showtime on Friday night. Now, moving into that HBO card, Superfly, that was over there in California. I mean, that that card was a very, very good card. I mean, a lot of people were looking forward to it. And it looked like it didn't necessarily disappoint. I mean, you have the first fight that was on the docket there between Juan Francisco Estrada and Carlos Quadras. There, of course, you know, those two guys being the top contenders for the WBC Super Flyweight Championship. Well, just like one step below the guy that was there at number one, who was Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. But, you know, both of those guys, Quadras and Estrada, you know, were former champions. Of course, you had Carlos Quadras was a former WBC Super Flyweight Championship. He also, you know, he was a guy that, you know, coming up, you know, defending his title. The first world championship he got was actually against Suzuki Castro Rungvisai by a technical decision. And he was able to defend it a few times before going up against Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez last year, where he lost by unanimous decision. And you have Estrada there, who was also there as a guy that, you know, lost to Quadras. I mean, lost to Chocolatito Gonzalez back when he was two steps below at light flyweight for the WBA light flyweight championship. But then he was still able to, you know, move up to flyweight and win the WBA and WBO flyweight championships and defend those a few times. So both of these guys were, you know, very good fighters there in the flyweight division. And then, you know, moving up to super flyweight to have this fight, you know, against each other. And, I mean, this was just a, you know, back-and-forth fight. You know, at first, the first few rounds, it looked like Carlos Quadras had the momentum, had the upper hand in the fight. But, you know, Estrada was, you know, still there, still, you know, trying to be consistent, still trying to find his target. And once he was able to find the target against Carlos Quadras starting in the sixth round, he looked like he was really, really getting to him. He was really scoring well, especially with his hooks, especially with his uppercuts. And Quadras kind of like looked like he was getting off of his game. A lot of the punches were, you know, ended up very wild and all of that. But it still looked like it was up to a point where, you know, Quadras had the upper hand in the fight. But then, you know, round 10, Estrada basically caught Carlos Quadras and knocked him down to the canvas there. And that kind of like shifted things the other way. And then round 11 and 12 were very close. And by the time the fight was over, I just didn't know, had no idea who was going to win the fight. And then, you know, we had our, once the announcement was called, I mean, Michael Buffer was able to, don't make a little mistake there. He had the, you know, scorecards there, 114, 113. You know, all the way through, but then he said, you know, the winner was Carlos Estrada. And I'm like, wait, hold up, what? Carlos Estrada? You mean Carlos Quadras, right? And then one of the judges in the ring, you know, at ringside said, whoa, 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 hold on, man, that's not what we're talking about. Look at the scorecard here. Look who we got winning, and. And then Michael Buffer was like, hold on a minute. There's been a correction. The winner of the fight won Francisco Estrada. And I was laughing. I was cracking up. I was like, oh, my goodness. He did not just do what he did. And so now, I mean, it is just 114, 113, you know, all the way through for Estrada. And to me, with that, I mean, that just says that, you know, the judges had it like 6-6, you know, basically even as far as rounds go, but that knockdown was the difference in the fight to make Estrada have that win and move to 36-2 36-2-0, and Quadras falls to 36-2-1. But that was a very, very good back and forth fight between those two. One of the better fights in the year, in my opinion. I hope that they'll be able to, fight each other again. Hopefully, it will happen, very soon here. But with Estrada ended up winning the fight, that makes him now the number one contender for that WBC Super Flyweight Championship. So. That's my initial thoughts about it. What did you take from that particular fight?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm sorry for being such a bad participant in a sense.
Yeah.
I didn't see these fights. I definitely read about it, but you said that made him the number one contender for the WBC belt, that the same belt that other kid won, right? Is that right?
Right. The guy that Sorong Vasai has.
Right. So, and this is my brief reading about this weekend. That's the one thing I definitely liked about this particular card, is that they had people in the same division getting a highlight. So, and just aside from the first fight, now you got, in regards to the second fight, the main event, that guy that won that, he is a virtual, kind of in a sense, no name, just in a virtual sense, But he did what he did, so now he definitely has a name. But I just like the fact that from the first fight is that they matched these guys up on the same card. They give them that same profile, So now that generates much more interest in that division, regardless of who won the fight, and regardless of the fact that it's not, So that's what I love about this card this last weekend, But I'm definitely gonna catch this fight because I love these lower weights, these lower weights where they. High output, fast and speed and stuff like that. The contrast and style. That's why I love boxing. So I'm definitely gonna check out that fight as soon as I can.
Yeah, definitely. When you're able to get the chance, when everything kind of like subsides down there, be sure to catch that fight, because that was a very, very good back and forth encounter between those two. So that's something that you'll want to see if you'll be able to get to. Before the end of this week, if you can. Real quick, just wanted to get through the second fight that was on the telecast, as Norio Inoue was able to defend his WBO Super Flyweight Championship against Antonio Nieves. Real quick about Nieves, I think he was moving down in weight to take this fight. This particular fight here, he with Nieves, he already had a split decision loss there before going up against Naya Inoue. Seeing here, he was at bantamweight there, and lost that fight at bantamweight before going into this fight against Noah Inoue here. But for everybody was just, looking forward to this here for Inoue. It was his first fight over in the States. The guy, Tom Loeffler of K2 Promotions, was able to, get things put together to, be able to bring him over to the States. And now he's going to be the guy that's going to be his promoter anytime he has a fight in the United States here. So this was just something where, we kind of like was being a showcase for American fight fans to see, like what he was all about. He didn't necessarily blow through Antonio Nieves, but it was something where, his skill was just a lot higher and a lot better than Nieves. So, even though, within the first three rounds or so, it kind of like looked like Noriega in a way was starting kind of slow. But then after that, he kind of like picked things up and then eventually, was way too much for Antonio Nieves. And Nieves's corner ended up stopping the fight there so that, he wouldn't be able to, seriously hurt Antonio Nieves. So he was able to retain his WBO title. And just, you know, looking to, you know, who else is out there in that super flyweight division that he could be able to fight. What I see that's actually very interesting here in the rankings is that Estrada, you know, ends up, he won that fight against Quadra, so he was going to be the number one contender for the WBC championship, but he was already the number one contender for the WBO championship that Inoue has. So he has, it looks like he may have a choice between going up against the WBC champion or going up against Naira Inoue. So that's going to be something to see which direction Estrada goes here, you know, for his title shot. Just wanted to, like, get right into the main event was the rematch of the WBC Super Flyweight Championship between Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez and Trzeciak Soarungvisai, of course. You know, in March, Soarungvisai was able to get the title from Chocolatito Gonzalez via decision over at the Barclays Center. I mean, at Madison Square Garden, my fault. And give, you know, Roman Gonzalez his first career loss. But here in this particular fight, it just seemed very different by interviews of a lot of people, how Gonzalez approached this fight, how he came to the ring, how he conducted himself in the ring. And it just looked like he was, you know, basically overmatched against Trzeciak Soarungvisai, and you know, a lot of the punches that he was throwing didn't seem like it really fazed Rungvisai, but on the flip side, Rungvisai was able to hurt and throw off the pace of Roman Gonzalez there, and then it basically came to that round there, but I think it was at fourth round. And Gonzalez got caught with a right hook that ended up dropping him for the first knockdown. And then he basically got caught with another hook that, like, kind of like he just didn't even see it. Well, he kind of like intentionally didn't see it. It looked like he would close his eyes before getting that punch, and then it ended up dropping him for good. Excuse me. So it was a knockout victory for Trzeciak Soarungvisai, and he retains that WBC Super Flyweight Championship. And, you know, kind of like a test to, you know, something where it kind of like seemed like Gonzalez reached his limit at Super Flyweight. And that's what I immediately took out of this particular fight was that, you know, a lot of people were talking about Chocolatito Gonzalez being the guy that should be number one pound for pound and all of that, winning the, you know, flyweight championships, light flyweight championship, super flyweight championship. But, you know, by the time he got to super flyweight, he was just a different fighter. And we saw that, you know, kind of, you know, against Carlos Quadras, where it looked like he was going back and forth with Carlos Quadras. And even though he got the unanimous decision, a lot of people thought that particular fight was closer than it was, than they had it. So this knockout just shows that he was just, it seems like he's not necessarily built for the super flyweight division. And, you know, if he, you know, ends up coming back to the ring, that he might have to, you know, say peace out to the super flyweight division and go back down to flyweight and, you know, be comfortable there. So that's what I pretty much took from that particular fight.
Yeah, and just before I even attempt to even dissect that, can you please tell me out and pronounce this kid's name again, the guy that won? So I don't butcher it too much.
Oh, well, the interesting thing with this guy is that he has two names, so they have, like, some type of thing going on, you know, where he's from, where he has, like, a, you know, a birth name and his alias. So Srisaket Sorungvisai is his, like, alias, but his birth name is Wasaxil Wangek. So it's like, call him Wangek or call him Sorungvisai, either, you know. But, you know, while they were, you know, calling him, calling it in the ring, while he was in the ring, they were talking about Sorungvisai. So that's what I go by.
Okay, so I would tip to go with Sorungvisai, all right? So first of all,
yep.
I'm even more impressed in the result of this fight. And doing some of the reading for this fight, Sorungvisai stated that in his previous win against Chocolatito, he only trained 2 months for the previous fight. When we took it up from, he said, for this fight, he actually trained 4 months. So obviously you see that whatever he did, he definitely did something different, and it certainly has paid off well for him in dividends. By nature of this fourth round KO. Aside from the fight, I mean, like you already spoke of, it certainly looks like Chocolatito has reached his climax in this particular division and will definitely need to go back find that success that he had, that he's probably had in the past few years and everything. I mean, despite the fact that he's reached his climax in his division, it's in a sense shocking. The reason why I say that because we already know that Chocolatito had been anointed as the number one Papa Pound on certain lists within the past three years since his extension. With that, I mean, really, he was looking almost damn near unstoppable, you know, for a while.
Yeah.
When he rose to those divisions and everything. So, I mean, for him to go to this, to what we see right now this past weekend, it's kind of shocking, you know, because, like, when you achieve – how many fighters do we know that achieve that unstoppable status? Not too many get to that point. But once again, there's always someone that's going to catch up to you at some point in time, you know. But
yeah,
he reaches climax in that division. But just, I mean, but really kudos back to Sarisica, whatever that guy's name, you know, whatever it is, you know what I'm talking about. But just kudos to him. And I hope we look forward to some good matchups going forward with him and some wars. With the Estrada kid, you know, out there, the mandatory. And kudos to the Estrada kid because, once again, when you have options for on two different belts, once again, you can think about it. People fight in order to get to a ranking within a particular rank sanctioning body.
Yeah.
This guy has the option for two different belts. That's a great opportunity for him. You know, but bottom line, we look forward to some great fights, But even back to the Chocolatito fight, because we've been kind of going back and forth on Twitter in regards to his knockout loss via fourth round, and kind of the narrative was speaking to the fact that if this was another fighter or maybe a different fighter that took a loss like that, a knockout loss, different would the fan result be or the backlash be against that fighter, i.e. Andre Ward, for example. And now that Chocolatito has his off his perch, where's that same backlash, you know? And once again, we talked about it before. We try not to play that color card, you know, because only an intelligent man and a man of color can rightly do that, you know? And once again, going back to being an commonsensical person, you know when to do that and when to not. But at some, like for example, with the promotion of the Crawford fight, we saw the lack of resources else behind that, and we pointed it out in regards to when this major network promoted a Pacquiao Horn fight. I mean, tickers, all kind of stuff, little snippets, commercials, things like that, features within SportsCenter. You didn't see that within the Crawford fight promotion at all, and it's at that point it gets obvious. Like I said, you don't want to just necessarily play that color card unless it's actually warranted. But like I said, if Ward would have lost for several Pobla fights, we know he would have been crucified. And we would have had some of our talking heads, Jim Lampley, people like that, would have vilified him for losing if he would have lost against Kovalev. But that wasn't the case. And even on that same note, Kovalev wasn't crushed by the media for losing, and then coming back in the second fight and losing the worst way possible via knockout or TKO, whatever it was. He still wasn't heavily vilified. So another fight would have taken a loss like that, would have been crushed, or he doesn't blow on the pound for pound. And even after the post Crawford fight, when he unified the titles, you had freaking Teddy Atlas on national TV trying to explain to him on why he wasn't pound for pound, and with him and Ward right there by his side, and trying to just find Loma as being number one pound for pound, which is ludicrous. And it's just a stopping and be found in all other kind of words I can throw in there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you have the whole thing there, especially with HBO and their agenda, as far as, you know, who they want to boost up or who they want to hold back. And I kind of, like, you know, saw that in the particular telecast, you know, there, even with Andre Ward as one of the, you know, commentators, that, you know, they were trying to still see if, you know, Gonzalez could get this win and, you know, be back in there in the pound for pound rankings. But, you know, they wouldn't give Ward the same props for beating Sergey Kovalev, who even after that first win that he had, they still had Sergey Kovalev listed amongst the top, you know, 10, probably within the top 6 or so pound for pound fighters in the sport before that second fight against Andre Ward. And so, you know, there it's just something where they just seem like they were trying to boost up a fighter that they put so much into there for HBO, which I'll get into a little bit more here in a bit here, actually, as we, you know, stepped into the overtime section of the show. But, you know, going back to Gonzalez, excuse me, I'm not sure how he's going to respond to this particular loss to Sorungvisai. It almost looks like, you know, he was, you know, like I was saying, you know, at the beginning of discussing this fight, he looked like he was defeated going into the ring. And once he saw what Rungvisai was able to do, it was only a matter of time before it looked like he was able to fold. He didn't look like the guy, you know, that kind of like overwhelmed his, you know, other opponents, specifically in the lower weight divisions. And he just looked like he was just not the same fighter that he was, you know, a couple of years ago when he was at the light flyweight in the minimum weight divisions against those other guys. He was like, you know, once he wasn't able to, you know, hurt these guys or knock these guys down, that kind of like took down his confidence big time. You know? But I'm going to just go into what I wanted to discuss in the overtime section of the show. And that is, of course, what's going to happen on September 16th, T-Mobile Arena. World Middleweight Championship fight. Canelo Alvarez, Gennady Golovkin. You know, a lot has been talked about this fight. You have, you know, fight fans looking forward to it. Kind of like trying to see if I could gauge the buzz, you know, outside circles to see if anyone, you know, pretty much knows about what's going on in the fight. I mean, I'm kind of like up in the air about how people are anticipating this fight because, I mean, to me, they're trying to see if this fight here between these two is trying to see if who is the best middleweight in the world or whatever it is, or who may move up in that pound-for-pound discussion, specifically, you know, if either one of these guys wins. Are people going to try to put the winner as number one pound for pound? If Canelo wins, what's he going to do next? If Golovkin wins, it may be up in the air because, you know, with this particular contract that Golovkin signed. If Golovkin wins, then Canelo may end up activating his rematch clause. But if Canelo wins, then Golovkin doesn't get a rematch against Canelo. So there's still like a lot of unknowns here with this particular fight. Once it happens and once the result is official. And it's like a lot of people don't want this particular fight to end up in hitting the scorecards because they're not, you know, necessarily confident that Golovkin will be able to win by the scorecard. So it's just a lot of unknowns instead of, you know, being excited for the fight and, you know, being glad that it's going to happen on that end. On the other end, of course, you have the whole thing with Oscar De La Hoya, you know, trying to boost the fight, did what he could to boost the fight, but it just doesn't seem like there's being enough done to, you know, have a lot of people talking about it. So, you know, once this fight happens, I mean, I don't know how many people are going to be able to, I mean, or going to watch it. I mean, they said it's going to be in some theaters, going to be in some closed circuit theaters or whatever, but I just don't see the overall interest in people going to a theater or going to a bar or going to someone's house or anything like that for people to watch this particular fight. And so, I mean, looking into it, as far as the actual fight is concerned, I'm kind of leaning towards Alvarez to get the win. But they're saying like he's kind of booking himself too much, that he won't move as much as he's done in the lower weights or anything like that against Golovkin. But I mean, I lean towards Alvarez, but like I said, it may still go the other way. What's your thoughts about it going up into the fight, Terrell?
I mean, it's really so much to talk about this fight, and before even the fight itself. I'm going to go back to something that we've always talked about going back quite some time in regards to Golovkin. Pay-per-view numbers. What has he done pay-per-view-wise? You know, so
right.
you spoke about the fact that how much general interest is in this fight from someone other than your typical boxing connoisseur, in a sense, just to say. I mean, we look back at just a few weeks ago when we had the Mayweather-McGregor fight, that those pay-per-view numbers had tons of crossover in that. You see, yeah, MMA fans and boxing fans, and that, like we spoke about, it likely had more MMA fans that contributed towards the pay-per-view numbers than your typical boxing fans and everything. So, going back to this fight, where Triple G does not have a solid pay-per-view fan base, does not.
Yeah.
Twice, maybe. Pay-per-view, and those are meager numbers at best. So we already know that this on this fight, Canelo is the A side. That's easy to see, because he has a Mexican fan base, which is considerable, you know, to his success and everything monetarily. But I think you say is that if Canelo takes a win, he doesn't have to rematch, correct?
Right, he doesn't have to fight Golovkin again. He's not obligated to.
Yeah, and even despite that, you know that if this is actually a great fight, whether it goes the full 12 rounds, which I think that it will, if it's a great fight, the fan base, basically, if it's a great fight, there's going to be a demand for a rematch, regardless of who wins the fight. And with on the Canelo side, the fact that when you look back at his last six fights, he's fought at 154, fought Khan, fought other few guys at 154 or at a catchweight, something like that. And what seemed like his virtual refusal to fight at 160, but he's always stated that, well, I'm building up to 160. I'm building up to be a full middleweight. And he's always stated that I'm moving up to 160, and now we know he's a full-fledged middleweight, which I certainly appreciate, but I don't want to see any waffling from him if he does get the win, if there is a fan demand for a second fight, a rematch, if he does win, I don't want to hear anything like that. Because right now you're middleweight. You're fighting for. So just what I'm saying, like he's a middleweight now. He's been built onto it. So all right, you're there now. So let's do it. Let's just get in the ring, and be a middleweight and stay at middleweight. Like you've been built onto it. So let's see it. As for the fight itself, we know we want Triple G wants to sit there and engage with him, be a rock and sock type match. That's one of the best way to, lure Canelo out of his game plan and make it a street fight in a sense, where we already know that Canelo is already an established boxer, a better boxer, and probably the more disciplined boxer as well, which definitely means something in this game. But you think about it. Go back to Canelo's fight when he fought Mayweather. Mayweather made him look like a kid in the ring, you know. And lessons like that, Canelo should have taken forward, going forward and everything, that, hey, boxing does matter. Skill does matter. It's not just about being physically bigger than the next guy. I need to know how to be able to move my feet laterally, vertically, all that stuff like that. And control the pace and distance of a boxing match in order to be a truly effective boxing champion, you know. So hopefully Canelo has taken all those lessons going forward, and that's why we call him today the better boxer than Triple G. I mean, we already know with Triple G's record, I don't even want to delve into the opposition level because we've broken that down enough on this show. But, you think about it. Who has Triple G fought that been a superb boxer other than a Jacobs, for example? You want to look at Danny Gill? No. No, certainly not, even though he's a former champion. But we already know Triple G has not fought a good boxer in that sense. So I definitely kind of want to lean towards the side for Canelo. But at the same time, I can give an argument if he can lure Canelo into a street fight and make it a brawl, and possibly hurting Canelo at some point. And like I said, possibly. I didn't say he will, possibly, you know. But boxing is more than just about being a brawl, about setting traps for your opponent, your counters, things like that, setting them up for things like that, for the punch that he doesn't see. So, I don't know. It's a very interesting fight, but just once again, the actual demand for the fight and the actual numbers, they're going to be somewhat lackluster. And but at the same time, like you stated, you got people like De La Hoya out there. I mean, he's doing his job. His company is his fighter. He's hyping the fight up and saying it's going to be this, that, and the other. And at the same time, from De La Hoya's side, I don't want to hear anything post this fight about the fact that the Mayweather fight hurt his fight. No. But, I mean, we already know the Mayweather McGregor, that was a possible. We know that. That was an anomaly to the sport. But this is actually a pre-boxing match. If you say your fighters are who they are, I want to see some great pay-per-view numbers. And I want to see, say, for example, like, I guess, 500 million buys for this fight to truly be successful in their eyes. Now, I know that, and you know that, that's not going to happen. I would venture around 350 to 400,000 buys on this fight, you know, at the most.
Yeah, that's interesting if they do, you know, 350 to 400,000 buys for this particular fight. I think the what the overall price is $79.99, if I'm not mistaken, for this pay-per-view. The thing is that with the purse, it seems like that Canelo Alvarez has, you know, the potential to make up to $25 million in this particular fight, and that he's guaranteed $15 million. But they're also saying that Golovkin is also making up to $15 million there, but that, you know, depending on the, you know, pay-per-view numbers, how much he would be able to take home here is about like 23 to 24 million. The thing is that they say that, you know, with that pay-per-view, it's going to be, you know, depending on how they're going to how that's going to end up going there, if it's going to be $79.99 or whatever it is. But they're going to have to, I think, you know, bring in at least 600,000 to 750,000 pay-per-view buyers in order to, I think, break even. So, I mean, some people are saying that, you know, it may do, you know, around 1.5 million pay-per-view buyers, but I just don't see that happening. You have to have some type of general, you know, buzz from it in order for it to reach that, you know, the reach that mark. You know, people know about Canelo, you know, from the Mayweather fight, and they know about Chavez Jr. because of his father. So that's why that fight was able to, you know, get as many, you know, pay-per-view buyers as it did, which, you know, reached about 1 million to about 1.2 million pay-per-view buyers. But here, still, there are people that don't know who Gennady Golovkin is, even though a lot of fight fans know who he is, but people in general don't know who he is. So it's not like a common fight where, you know, like I said, a Floyd Mayweather or a Mike Tyson or, you know, somebody else, you know, that, you know, the general public knew about. Because, you know, years ago in the 90s, we knew about a lot of fighters. It wasn't just Mike Tyson that we knew about. I mean, we knew about Evander Holyfield. We knew about Riddick Bowe. We knew about Lennox Lewis. We knew about, you know, a few other guys because they were putting themselves out there, you know, in different avenues, different ways to promote themselves so that the general public could see them fight. You know, like, for example, Riddick Bowe. I mean, you were able to see Riddick Bowe on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in one episode. You're able to see Evander Holyfield in a couple of episodes on some comedy shows and things like that. So you're not able to get that opportunity with a Gennady Golovkin or, you know, Canelo Alvarez because it's kind of like hard to, you know, push them to the general public. They tried to do it on ESPN through First Take because, of course, you have Max Kellerman on there with Stephen A. Smith. But I still don't get the overall buzz that, okay, I see that these two guys, I see what they've been able to do. I can't wait for this fight to happen. I'm just not seeing it.
And give me those purse numbers again for each respective fighter, please.
The purses, they said like both of them are guaranteed $15 million each. Yeah, they're guaranteed $15 million each, but the deal, the pay-per-view deal is that Alvarez will get the majority of the pay-per-view profits there, you know, so that...
That's fine and handy for their guaranteed purses, but once again, in reality, what do I know and what do you know? That's not going to happen. And once again, this is where Triple G's lack of commercial success is coming to bite them. Tom Leffler, again, nobody to be mad at but himself. And I'm not sure if you were able to catch some of the promotional commercials which featuring Triple G and Canelo. I'll tell you what, Canelo, we know Canelo. I'm not saying he's a household name, but people know who he is. They see that name Canelo, they can relate to it. They know what he does. Triple G, he looked like a clown in those commercials. He did. It was just kind of unnatural and just like it's his first time. So, once again, Tom Leppard, this comes back to finally biting the butt, but not probably putting your fighter into a position to be a successful household name with massive crossover, you know. So, that's on him. And I said, they're going to take a loss because they're not going to sell no 1 million pay-per-views on this. There's no way, you know. I mean, especially in this age now where you have people have to have the ability to stream fights on other devices such as Fire Stick, Roku, things like that, and get it for and stream it on Facebook. It's not gonna, pay-per-views is not going to happen for them. It's not.
Nope. Yeah, I just don't see it. I don't see it either. I really don't. And that's going to be, you know, to me, that's going to end up being a disappointment for Golden Boy Promotions. And, you know, there's like a lot of things on the line here for not just Canelo, but Golden Boy Promotions in this particular fight, because, you know, if Canelo ends up losing this fight and ends up losing by knockout, then a lot of the, you know, buzz that was coming from Canelo pretty much gets shut out the window if he loses by knockout.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, do you see enough coming in this fight from either side at all? You know?
Nah, I don't see a knockout from either side, because I don't think that either fighter will make the type of mistake to where they're going to be in serious trouble against the other fighter. I think that, you know, I think that they're going to be tactically cautious, specifically in the first six rounds or so. And I think that, you know, for me, I think with Alvarez, I think he's going to be very cautious trying to, you know, get away from the jab of Gennady Golovkin, but he's probably going to give Golovkin different looks with his head movement and his movement laterally. So I just have to see how he's going to be able to move laterally against Golovkin, because if he's going to be able to do that and have the same, if he has the same success against Golovkin as Jacobs did, then he's going to get the win by decision without question, because Jacobs outboxed Golovkin in that fight in March. He straight up outboxed him. It was just that, you know, Golovkin had his that knockdown that he scored, you know, where Jacobs, you know, kind of like lost his momentum. And then in that following round, the fifth round, Golovkin was able to score a good, you know, good couple of punches there to win that round. But, you know, anything else other than that was, you know, something where he kind of like scored a close win in the round or anything like that, but Jacobs beat Golovkin in that particular fight. So, I mean, I just see Alvarez just outboxing Golovkin to score the decision win over him.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that assessment. With Alvarez starting off tentative, keeping his distance. Lacking the willingness to engage, but keep in mind, at some point in time in a 12 round fight, you got to fight. You can't be on your horse the entire fight. So, he's going to fight, and so I mean, you already know the things that each fighter is going to be looking for is to taste the true power of their opponent. You know, because we know once again, Canelo has built himself up into a full-fledged middleweight at this point. So I tell you right now, I don't want to see him run. I don't want to see that, because you've had your time to feast on the cons of the world and turn yourself into a true middleweight. So I want to see at some point, you definitely want to see him engage. Where, you know, in regards to Jacobs, I think he intentionally missed his second day win, so he can come in and win, like, what, in the 170, 75 range and stuff like that, to enjoy that weight advantage over Triple G, despite the fact that he lost. I mean, and that we already know that's debatable for his true ring thespians and things like that. But at some point in time, Canelo is going to have to fight. And what's going to happen then? You look at some of the fights that Triple G had. I was trying to think of when he fought Woody Monroe. And he's lining Monroe up, and then at some point in time, I think it was like third or fourth round, he implored Monroe to come on, let's go, give me more. Well, you're not going to do that against your top tier fighters, so I don't see if you're going to be able to do something like that against Canelo, like come on, give me more, what you show me. So, these right now, this is the cream brulee of the middleweight. I want to see you on how that power is received from each opponent. and equally from the Canelo side. Triple G's been at middleweight for a long time. Despite his reluctance to move up a weight class to fight Ward, no need to go there. But how much power will Triple G be able to put on Canelo, and how will Canelo receive those punches? You know, will he receive those well? A bunch of questions from each side. That's why this is just an interesting fight from the promotional side, let alone the fight side itself. You know, definitely.
Man, yeah, yep. And I think, you know, with that, you know, with that thing being up in the air as far as like Canelo being forced to engage, that I think that will, you know, add to the intrigue of the particular fight. If he's going to be able to engage and scrap up against somebody like Gennady Golovkin there and see how that is going to, basically, see if that'll force his hand to see if he's going to adjust or not. I think he's, you know, he was able to make adjustments against the likes of against Miguel Cotto there, but he was also somebody that looked like he was being outboxed by Amir Khan before sparking Amir Khan. So he has his ups and downs, but he can't have, you know, something like he had against Amir Khan against Gennady Golovkin and end up, having success there in that case. So we'll see how that is going to end up there in this particular fight here for them. And one thing I wanted to also mention there, on the same day, earlier in the day, you'll have the other middleweight championship on the line, as Billy Joe Saunders will go up against Willie Monroe Jr. Over in England. So I'm going to see if I could be on the lookout for, you know, pretty much be on the lookout for that as well there to see if Saunders is able to get the win over Monroe, or if Monroe gets that WBO middleweight championship there. But on that note, I'm going to put a close to this episode of the show. Be sure to catch the next show that'll be on Sunday, 7:30 next week. And we'll have, see if we'll have the Cold Hard Truth on Sports on Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. With host Matthew Long there. So be sure to catch that. And like I say, at the end of every show, point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Be safe. Hug it down there, Terrell, and I'll get back at you, all right?
All right, later, bro. Take care.
All right.